This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Good morning, H-Town. Time to go to work.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Yes, thank you, Seth.
It is Wednesday.
Race day.
Got monster trucks and trashy women. Come on down.
You ever been to a monster truck race?
No, I haven't. I haven't either. And I really want to go.
Okay.
Next time they have one at NRG, I'm going.
Yeah.
I bet a monster truck rally is kind of like a heavy metal concert from the 90s where there really aren't any trashy women there. There are some, but they're all there for the band. If you go to a heavy metal concert, you know, like a heavy metal concert in the 90s, it's a bunch of dudes and 7 women who are all going to be backstage by halfway through.
Yeah, you know what it probably is? And I don't know, maybe monster truck rallies have appealed to a young audience. They've sustained over the course of time. But what I've found when I go to nostalgia acts concerts like you're talking about is it's a lot of 40 and 50-somethings reaching back for their teen years, reliving it. So they may not have the same proclivities that they had back then, but they like to act like, and maybe they do. You know?
Yeah, and I'm talking like heavy metal too, by the way, like Poison and everything. Obviously, you're going to get a good mix.
Yeah,
didn't you go to Poison or something lately?
I did not.
No,
I didn't go. But they had a huge concert at Minute Maid Park with a bunch of those bands.
Yeah, it was they were all the combined.
I didn't go.
Because Tommy Lee out of nowhere popped up on the internet. Popping up in the old school way that Tommy Lee used to pop up, like buck naked. And I'm like, what's going on with this? Tommy Lee is in good shape. Don't get me wrong. He's kind of like Keith Richards. You look at him and you're like, wow, this guy, for having lived a pretty hard life, I'm guessing, he's in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
But it was part of that tour. He was staying relevant.
I didn't go to that. It was at Minute Maid Park. The other segue coming up. The other act that plays a lot at Minute Maid Park is the Houston Astros, who...
I've heard of them.
It's a good act. You should go check them out.
They were big in the 80s. Then they made another nostalgic comeback.
Late 90s, they made a nostalgic comeback. They went away for a while. They were in rehab for a few years between 2011 and 2013.
A lot of people thought they'd never get back together again, but, you know...
Yeah.
The almighty dollar sign.
And they cycled through some of the background band members, but the core remains intact. You know, lead singer Jose Altuve and others.
Dude, I'm going to tell you, man, I couldn't get through. I went to that Journey concert, and this is how I am with new band members. If it's a young band, like if it's Van Halen when they became Van Hagar, okay, it's still a band. They're still putting out new stuff and everything. Yeah. When I start to see some of the old bands, but with new singers, and they're slowly becoming a cover band. I was gone, man. I was out of that. I got a bunch of free food at our suite that we had, the company, not my suite, and I jetted out there by about midway through. Don't Stop Believing,
dude.
I stopped believing immediately.
You don't like Filipino Steve Perry?
It's not okay, I knew you were going to make that, because you always do. You have to make it about race.
What?
Okay. No, I don't like non-Steve Perry Steve Perry. That's my issue. My God.
That's Filipino Steve Perry. What?
Yeah.
So I stayed for the whole... They packed the NRG Stadium at the rodeo. What are you talking about? Journey's beautiful. All right, so the Astros. Back to the Astros here. Another shutout. Of the Tampa Bay Rays. One of the big things, they've clinched the AL West, Seth, and they have an 8-game lead over the Yankees. They're so far ahead of the Yankees, it doesn't even register for me that the Yankees were able to come from behind in the bottom of the ninth inning against the Pirates last night. I went to bed, the Pirates are up 8-4, and I wake up this morning and Giancarlo Stanton's hitting grand slams and Judge is getting celebrated for his 60th home run and all this
other
stuff.
It was a very big moment for Yankees fans because a lot of times they have to celebrate these Aaron Judge milestones that come with a loss for the team. But now the Yankees were able to beat the Pirates, which for them is a big deal.
Yeah,
you know, because they don't get to have a lot of big moments in the playoffs
Aaron Boone is on the TV in our studio, and I can't hear what he's saying because we're on the air. But I'm picturing him saying, "You know, a win's a win. You know, you get them any way you can get them, bro. It's the Pirates in game 147." But the Astros still lead by 8 games. You know, big topic. I was listening yesterday. You and I didn't go down this road, and I don't know. Maybe we should have. But debating whether or not – this is where we are with the Astros. They win so much that it's not about how they won or that they won. It's do we celebrate that they won? Do we celebrate – do we – because they celebrated tremendously in the clubhouse on Monday night. They were – you know, they did the whole champagne thing, which is tradition in baseball. There seemed to be some debate and consternation on our air yesterday as to whether or not we should be celebrating division titles at this point.
I thought people that mightn't got to that point. I even felt like on the broadcast last night as the crew, as Todd and Jeff and Julio were reliving the festivities of the night before, and some people were concerned that the Astros with a hangover might not be able to do all that. The hangover... You know how baseball is. Like every now and then a hangover is actually good for performance.
Yeah.
So they were just fine. But I felt like even Callis and Blum and Julia were kind of chuckling at, the naive and the Hector Neris having a good time with these victories.
Look at this cute little Neris over
here. Yeah, yeah. Well, they don't realize that around here this is just no big deal. Like, all right, come on. You got to celebrate these things.
Yeah.
It's not even a small victory. I'm all for Sean. I used to be old school, hard-o, jerk, like, no fun. You're like, you don't celebrate until you win what you came for and all that. Yeah. Life's too short, man. You got to celebrate the small victories. Plus, it's been proven by psychology that celebrating the small victories leads to better habits and behavior over time.
Oh, really?
So if because it gives you that little. You know what? The very simple example is on a to-do list, crossing off a. Checking a box on a to-do list,
yes.
You know how awesome that feels?
Oh.
That's a little dopamine release.
Yes.
It reinforces the good behavior. That's like giving yourself a doggy treat.
This explains a lot about me. Okay, I add a lot of really easy things to my to-do list just so I can check them off.
You get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
A lot of times getting started is the hardest part.
Yeah.
So you get that little dopamine response.
Okay.
So winning the AL West is that nice little doggy treat you give yourself to head on and into the World Series.
Okay, this is good. This is good. Okay, so now tell me, Seth, from what you've learned, what is it that will get me to do the things that are much harder on my list that have been there for 2 months now?
Breaking it down into smaller tasks.
Really?
As always, yes. You have to strike that balance between being goal-oriented versus just being like, hey, a victory today is just doing these minimal small things that lead towards the greater goal.
This is very helpful. I didn't know I was going to get this out of the Astros smoking the rest of the American League this morning.
This, Sean, the Astros will be the example. The Astros in celebrating their AL West victory will be the example that gets you to file your taxes on time.
Yes.
Because you'll have a bunch of small victories stacked up along the way.
Right. Yes. I had buy TurboTax as a to-do, and I was able to do that. It was actually getting my taxes done that had been the really hard part.
You know, and honestly, to be very serious, that is the getting started is the biggest obstacle. So a lot of times you have to just the biggest goal is to take that first step and make that your only goal, because more times than not, you end up, once you get started, you keep rolling anyway. You have to actually stop yourself.
Yeah.
But like for exercise, that's why setting your running shoes or your sneakers out in the morning and your workout stuff is like the first thing you put on when you wake up, and getting your actual sneakers on, that's a huge first step compared to thinking like, well, I'm going to get up and I'm going to work out for 2 hours.
Glad we have this.
Nobody wants to do
that. I'm glad we have this conversation. This is really, really helpful. So the
Sean, I was a world-class procrastinator for a long time.
I know. I need to learn from you.
Yeah, I've got all kinds of little tricks and gadgets to get myself moving.
All right, so congrats to Kyle Tucker for his 100th RBI, 18th Astro to get 100 RBI season. Congrats to Jeremy Pena for making me feel decent about his bat heading towards the postseason here. He hit a three-run bomb last night. We can talk about this more as the show rolls on. They were debating on the broadcast last night, Seth. I know you saw the game, but they were debating whether or not Hunter Brown is going to be on the postseason roster. I'm like, wait, hold on. We're debating this right now?
Yeah.
Like, this is a discussion? Hunter Brown being on the postseason?
It's an embarrassment of riches we have here with the Astros and this pitching staff, which might go down as one of the best starting pitching staffs of all time. Where it was
statistically, yes,
the percentage of pitchers on the staff that have below a 4.0 ERA is right now, and not just the starting. So the percentage of pitchers that have below a 4.0 ERA is 97.7% or something, or 99.7%. There was one team that had 100%, which obviously you won't surpass that. But it was, I'm blanking on who has the...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just know that the starting pitchers, which is what you had brought up initially, they're all under four because they showed them all. They showed all seven of them on the TV last night on a graphic. Urquidy's flirting with four right now. Urquidy's at like a 3.96 or something. The rest of them, Garcia may be over four. I'm not sure. One of those two guys is probably going to be off the postseason roster to start with is my guess. Either Urquidy or Garcia, because you can't sit Hunter Brown. He's pitching too well right now.
One of my favorite things about social media is kind of like, I don't like to relive a lot of the whole being better than everybody else scandal. I'm over most of it. But every now and then when somebody just jumps in and just assumes that Altuve is not good anymore and they make some comment about how, you know, he's no good without the cheating or anything, it's just so much fun to... It's so much fun to watch people immediately shut them down with what a good season Altuve is.
He's having a great season.
It's nice. I got to be careful, Sean. I'm going to celebrate the small victories, but also be careful because it feels like everything's coming together.
Yes,
and,
it does.
Yeah.
All right. We got a little bit of clarity yesterday on the situation with one of the Texans we've been talking about all week long. We'll tell you what that is. We'll start to look ahead to the Bears game this weekend. John McClain joins us at 8 o'clock on the show today. You are listening to Payne and Pendergast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Wednesday. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. We got a little bit of clarity yesterday, at least in so much as Justin Britt is not going to be playing anytime soon for the Houston Texans. The Texans placed center Justin Britt on the non-football illness list, reserve non-football illness list. He's still listed first on the depth chart. I guess this is proof that the depth chart isn't all it's wrapped up to be sometimes in the media guide each week, because Justin
as Lovie Smith would tell you over and over again.
As
like last week when Kenyon Green wasn't the starter. And
he is the starter now.
Right, but he wasn't the starter going into the game, and yet he played every snap in the game.
Do we do a moment of silence here for the depth chart? Are we done doing depth chart things now based on the last 2 weeks with the Texans?
No, it's been like this for like seven decades.
I know, I feel like I'm finally coming to the realization. It's about me, Seth. I feel like this is validation for me. I've been telling myself for years to – to treat this thing like it means something.
But why would you? This isn't the first time this has happened.
I know.
Why on earth would you put it to bed for now? Maybe you put it to bed until next season.
Okay.
And then you start, with it then.
Okay.
I don't think it's a. Maybe. Was it ever? Maybe with the Kubiak and O'Brien. Or at least with Kubiak. I think Kubiak just didn't tend to be as much of a control freak about things. And he probably just let the PR staff do whatever they were going to do. So it was probably more accurate.
This is where our blind spot and our decision to repress and suppress 2021 is coming into play. They used the depth chart, it felt like, a few times last year to send messages to guys.
Oh, yeah. That was when
Amenihu.
Amenihu was fourth on the depth chart. Yeah, yes. It was a big deal in the first couple weeks.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to kill it because it's been a good source for soap opera storylines.
Okay, so that's true. They felt very Belichickian last year, like almost the cold-hearted nature they were going about some of that stuff.
That's all. Okay. Yeah, that's all. Now, as far as Justin Britt goes, we still have no clarity on what exactly is going on with him personally now.
If I had to guess, I would imagine it's something kind of personal and emotional. It's a non-football injury list, so I'm guessing he's just struggling. My complete guess would be he's struggling with just exactly where he is in his career right now and perhaps handling all of that, which obviously is... he's always struck me as kind of a very thoughtful guy.
Yes.
You know, he puts a lot of thought into his answers and he looks very serious and gives consideration to it. And you can tell there's a lot going on, in his head in a good way.
Sure.
But I just wonder if he's just kind of going through some stuff right now.
He's physically, he's been hampered really for the last 3 years. Yeah. I mean, he missed all of 2020. We know he was banged up last year. He's been banged up this year. I don't know. This is where I'm going to dive into your experience as a former player, especially one who had injuries at the end of your career. I mean, can you put yourself in his shoes a little bit?
Oh, yeah. It sucks. Yeah. It's embarrassing when you're just not playing the way you know you're capable of playing. When I got cut in training camp after going into my 11th season, I was coming off my third ACL surgery, actually, and I just wasn't the same guy. So in training camp, I had a couple of really rough games, and I got cut, and I knew immediately. I'm like, well, I'm not putting myself back out there again. So I'm not. I told my agent, I'm done. I said, listen, I don't care how much anybody offers. Come on.
This is my thought.
If somebody gets desperate, But realistically, there's no chance.
Seth, you seem awfully set in your ways right here. But Minnesota's offering $4.5 million. Well.
But no, I knew that based on what I had done in training camp, because of my injury history, I knew that I would probably get some offers, to come play for minimum somewhere, which I would have been cool with. It wasn't like I thought I was above playing for minimum or anything at all. It's that I just knew that it wasn't going to be – it wasn't going
to – You have a standard.
Standard. Yeah. So – and within a couple of weeks, I was in poor enough shape that I burned all the bridges by treating myself like a dumpster for 3 days or 3 weeks, and there's no chance anybody.
I'm gonna make the decision easy for all of us.
Yeah, I sent pictures of myself to my agent just so he knew.
Too. Yeah, yeah. You don't need to work on this anymore, Mr. Agent. Don't waste any more time. I am fat.
But that was when I was unattached to a team. So the hard thing would be, okay, if maybe he's just in a lot of pain, kind of like Andrew Luck. Maybe it's just gotten to the point where training camp was way worse for him than he thought it would be. He wasn't out there a lot during practice, And there's a million different possibilities. I know that Lopez initially last week was kind of I felt Lopez was being harsh initially, just in saying that he quit on the team, or that if you know, because you don't always know. You just don't. You might feel like you're fine or you'll be good going in, and then by the end of that training camp, you can just tell that your body just doesn't have it anymore. So I don't think it's as simple as, well, he's he should have said he should have known that he couldn't play. You really don't know until you cross that threshold.
Yeah, that dynamic is interesting that you just brought up. You were unattached to a team once Jacksonville cut you in 2007. Yeah. Justin Britt made a commitment to the Texans, and that's probably we're totally guessing what the issue is here, but we're just doing the what if. What if the issue is he struggling with playing or not playing? He's not what he used to be. He's embarrassed by some of the film that's out there on him,
yeah,
now, whatnot. That is a different dynamic.
You know when I knew I was in trouble, Sean? So this was in 2007. I'd been rehabbing on my own because the Texans released me in March or so. So I've been living on my own, rehabbing on my own. Well, living with Brandy, but rehabbing on my own. And I felt like I was pretty good. I was running through cones and stuff. I was working out at some like local facility doing, you know, the obstacle course,
yeah,
type
agility
stuff.
Yeah.
A bunch of normal people, and I felt good. And I got the Jaguars signed me, and a lot of the same staff was still there, and the equipment guys were still there, who I knew and liked a lot. And they were like, "Hey, look, well, we'll just give you. We've got we've got all your old stuff, your same size pants and everything." I put on my pants, same sizes last time I was in Jacksonville, and they were like, they were baggy, like old school baseball pants. And
oh,
I was like,
really?
Oh no. I might not have recovered as well as I thought I did.
So this is what atrophy looks like.
Yes. It was now that I'm a middle-aged man, the same effect goes on with, I realized the other day, I was like, oh wow, all my shirts are 2XL and all my pants are XL, like my workout pants. Like I've become the top heavy middle-aged guy.
Yes.
That doesn't work his legs out. That was me as a football player. And I was like, as a guy that always relied on his leg strength as a huge part of his game, I really was like, oh boy, I might have been deluding myself a little bit. This isn't the way my legs usually feel when I go out and play good football.
I'm just picturing you working out on your own in Jacksonville or wherever you were working out at the time in the off season in 2007, and you're working out at some facility and you're feeling really good about it, and you come home to Brandy, and Brandy's like, "How did it go?" And you're like, "Good, man. I smoked Gus today." And she's like, "Who's Gus?" "He's an accountant.
Yeah.
He works out the same time I do at lunch. I smoked his ass."
We did box drills. Shelly couldn't keep up for crap.
Shelly?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It's a Wednesday. We're going to start to dive into this, the Bears game here. Landry had an interesting angle yesterday to kick off their show on this Bears game that got me significantly more excited for Sunday. We'll share that with you. And Seth and I need to do a status check on our NFL head coach death pool. So we will check in on the four coaches we each chose to be the first one fired. I think we each have a clear leader in the clubhouse at this point. So we will check in on that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll get to the Texans here in just a second. Boy, Seth, they're showing the highlights of the Yankees game in our studio here from last night. For those who missed it, the Yankees came back 5 runs in the bottom of the ninth, and they beat the Pirates 9-8. They were down 8-4 going into the bottom of the ninth. Aaron Judge got the rally kind of kicked off with his 60th home run of the season. It was a solo home run. And then they hit Giancarlo Stanton hits a grand slam a few batters later, and the Yankees win the game. They show the highlight of Judge's home run. He hits this thing into the left field bleachers, and it was like watching somebody kick an ant pile, watching these Yankee fans rummaging for the ball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the ball lands. Well, I mean, it's and God forbid the 61st one lands in a group of drunk Yankee fans in the ninth inning of a game. You know, like it's like he hit $50,000 or whatever the price is on a ball like that into the bleachers. Watching these people climb over each other to get the ball is, as long as I'm not in it, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, at that point, too, I wonder what the ratio is on even actual percentage of either Yankees or Pirates fans versus professional ball snaggers. That's probably where it gets really rough. Remember that guy in the bodysuit that was stealing balls away from little kids a few weeks ago? That guy's probably out there.
The dude with the hipster hat?
Yeah. I had a theory about that. It was, and I can't, somebody texted in 7135.
That was in Kansas City. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Sean. Yeah. But I mean, it was for a specific player that hit the home run
Soto.
Ball.
It was Soto.
It was Juan Soto's ball. So that it might be theoretically worth a good chunk of money.
Right.
I think that guy was dressed distinctively so that he could authenticate the ball. Because apparently he'd been telling people in the stands that he was a pro at this. He was telling them to stay away from the railing, or there's no telling what might happen. Like, dude, he was out there all weekend. So I think by being dressed distinctively and having like that body tight suit and that hat on, he'd be able to show that he was the one that caught the ball and that's the one he's selling on eBay.
I know nothing about that business, that whole ecosystem of memorabilia and authentication and things like that. It might be smart, I guess. You know, that sounds like it. That sounds like it makes sense to me. You know, if you're trying to get $100,000 for a ball or whatever.
Is that job any more ridiculous than what you and I do, Sean?
No. I throw zero shade at this person. None.
He's out there actually getting some physical activity in the sun.
Us.
You know, getting his vitamin D.
Unlike
not vitamin
us.
D deficient. So somehow you and I spend all this time in Houston and are vitamin D deficient, most likely.
Yeah.
Because we sit in a studio talking into a microphone. Well, that guy's out there beating up little kids. Like any American should.
Right.
Teaching some character.
No, we're in a studio
their parents
talking
won't.
About him. That's
yeah.
Right.
You go full Ted Bundy on him. That's right.
Indeed.
No, don't do, not on the kids. Yeah. That's you know, on your maybe on a, another adult.
That was a hotkey, by the way. That sounds so clear that anyways.
I was trying to say go full Al Bundy. Ted Bundy came out.
Ted Bundy.
I can't remember what the situation was, but it was appropriate.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. Just reported by Aaron Wilson, Jimmy Morrissey elevated to the 53-man roster. So I bring that up because we just got done talking about Justin Britt getting put on the reserve non-football illness list. Obviously, Scott Quisenberry is going to be the starting center now for the time being, for the foreseeable future. So Jimmy Morrissey, backup center who started a few games last year when Justin Britt was hurt, is now part of the 53-man roster. Little news item.
Morrissey, who was – I think he went to the high school where
Chris Myers.
Chris Myers is coaching in New Jersey. So we'll have to – I remember Chris Myers texted me to inquire about him after the first game he was in. And I just happened to be like – editing a video, and I sent him immediately a pretty rough video for Jim Morrissey.
And then I was on that text. Chris was very enthusiastic, especially because Chris played center here, so it was almost like Rocky Balboa passing the baton to Apollo Creed's son kind of thing, you know?
So Chris was like, so how'd my guy Morrissey do? And I within 3 seconds, I sent him a little gif of Morrissey getting truck sticked by some dude.
Have a nice day.
Yeah. LOL. But it was, you know, we'll see. Hopefully we don't see Morrissey have to play it all that much. Kenyon Green, yeah, that's funny. These Pro Football Focus grades, I've always been skeptical, but I've gotten more and more skeptical from game to game. When you look at some of the grades, like Kenyon Green I thought he played better than his Pro Football Focus grade was. And the NFL All-22 was not out for the Texans as of last night, despite guaranteeing 24 to 48 hours after the game is over.
Don't get us started on that. Yeah.
Yeah, as I told you, NFL.com has no way of reaching customer service. They won't give you an email or anything to actually tell for you to tell them that you're having a miserable experience. That's just what they do year after year. So I'm looking forward to going and watching the All-22 and seeing, you know, exactly how Kenyon Green did. But I think that the arrow's pointed up for Kenyon Green. And I think that Quisenberry was better in a lot of respects than current Justin Britt, you know, Justin Britt who's banged up.
No doubt.
So, and obviously Quisenberry, you know, still has upside to go. So I think that I feel better about this rushing attack after last week because of the way Damian Pierce played. And I especially feel better after watching the Bears run defense, which is just atrocious.
Oh, Aaron Jones. So yeah, Aaron Jones ran through them like, he was hot knife.
They looked
butter.
Like the Texans run defense.
They did.
It's almost the same thing. Kind of undersized guys, missing tackles, taking bad angles, wide open holes. That's what the Texans run defense looks like. So that's good for Damian Pierce, at least. And anybody that wants to take the over on Damian Pierce rushing yards.
Good advice, and anybody that owns Damian Pierce in fantasy, absolutely. All right, so Landry had an angle on this game yesterday, Seth, and I had not looked at the schedule for week 3 yet, but this got me like 40% more excited for the game on Sunday between the Texans and the Bears. By the way, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610 at noon.
Shazam.
Yeah. Now, the Texans are a small underdog in this game. They're 2.5-point underdogs.
Oh, the disrespect.
What it means is on a neutral field, the Texans are the better football team because you give 3 points for home field advantage. So.
The slightest of actual respect.
Yeah, okay. No, but I like your disrespect angle. They're being disrespected because they're better than the Bears.
I'm slighted by your slight respect.
Yes.
That's what I say.
Exactly. So let's pretend that we're in a world where the Texans win the game on Sunday. I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world. They win the game on Sunday. Here is what the rest of the AFC South looks like this weekend. Mm-hmm. The Texans would be 1-1-1 after beating the Bears on Sunday. The Tennessee Titans, 0-2, play host to the Las Vegas Raiders. Tennessee is an underdog at home in week 3. Without any injury issues that we didn't know about going into the season, you know, Harold Landry's out, but with that, just purely based on losing to the Giants and getting smoked by the Bills, the Titans, who were the number one seed in the AFC last year, are home underdogs to what I would say is an average at best Raider team. They're 0-2 also. They're 2.5-point underdogs at home to an 0-2 Raiders team.
Yeah. Taylor Lewan is, I believe that ankle injury he had is pretty serious.
So okay.
So there's one. Not enough to move the line in offensive line. Even no matter how successful your podcast is, an offensive lineman generally isn't going to move the line all that much.
Right.
So Taylor Lewan is that's a hit to them. So that's a good one. Boy, they looked rough. They looked really bad this week.
Yes, it was awesome.
It was fun to watch.
It was.
They just got throttled.
It was. We'll talk more about Vrabel when we hit our NFL head coach death pool segment. The other two games in the division, Kansas City is at Indianapolis. I think we know which direction that game should go.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Frank Reich, hot seat, eh?
Big time. Yeah, not exactly the opponent you want there. KC is a touchdown favorite at Indianapolis. And then Jacksonville is a touchdown underdog at the Chargers. So you've got two big underdogs and then Tennessee, who's playing horrible right now. If everything plays out where the Texans win on Sunday and those other three teams in the division lose, not the craziest parlay in the world, the Texans will be atop the AFC South at 1-1-1.
What did the Chargers?
First place, 3 weeks in.
Is there a home field advantage for the Chargers now? Have they swung that around?
That's a good question. The reason, for those who don't know, the reason Seth's asking that is because they share a stadium with the Rams, and they basically, since they moved to LA, been second class citizens in their own city. I would hope so. You know, LA feels like kind of a bandwagon kind of town, I would think.
Yeah.
And you still got people that come up from San Diego to go to those games.
Yeah, and their paid attendance last year. This is going to drive me insane, Sean. The attendance figures. Last year, the eighth highest attended games were Los Angeles at 71,598. 10th highest was Los Angeles at 70,240.
They just put Los Angeles in there?
No, they just go ahead. And the disrespect, Sean. The disrespect they show both the Los Angeles teams here by not even delineating which one they're talking about. I'll not have it. Damn it. What the hell?
Yeah.
Come on. Damn it.
I'm going to guess the Rams were the one up top.
Yeah, but it's barely a difference.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that the Chargers, I didn't realize the Chargers had actually ended up selling so many. I don't think that as many people show up to the game.
Probably not.
But they've done a good job of selling tickets.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So that's what's at stake this weekend, Seth. First place in the AFC South for the Houston Texans. They can make it happen.
Okay. So if the AFC South ends up being abysmal this year, as it looks like it might
be. It's shaping up that way.
Unless maybe the Jaguars end up being good, you know. But it's looking pretty rough right this moment. If they end up being abysmal this year, but the Astros have a class, or the Texans have a classic, hey, we made the playoffs, but it's because they went 8-9 in the miserable AFC South. Will you feel good about this? I'm trying to put this in context of like celebrating winning the AL West, where some people feel it's almost beneath the Astros at this point to celebrate the AL West, for much different reasons, obviously. Would people feel like, okay, this is actually a good sign, even though it's a weak division, you actually won a weak division and you're building something here. I think it's all going to center on what Davis Mills is and how he played to get you to that 8-9 record.
Okay, bingo. I mean, Davis Mills is still the biggest story of the season. Regardless of record, Davis Mills is still because they're not winning the Super Bowl. So the biggest thing is finding a quarterback. That's the biggest thing. But your question was, how would we feel if they won the division? And I guess it would be 8-8-1 because they have that tie. So let's say they're plain Jane 500, 8-8-1 at the end of the year. To me, at that point, Seth, the fact that they won the division is almost irrelevant. If they win eight games this year, I'm feeling really good about the direction of this team. Because look at the schedule. For them to win eight games the rest of the way, like it's gonna require them to get some fairly significant wins over some teams that are fairly highly thought of at this point. Look, they still have to play the whole AFC West at this point. Now, they still play five more games in the division, which could be five of the eight wins right there. And maybe we're feeling, you know, if the eight wins are the five division games, Washington, the Giants, and the Bears, how do we feel? But regardless, I think eight wins over any of those teams, I'm feeling really good about the direction. Absolutely.
Is one of our I'm going to tell you something. This person texted the exact same text three times in the last 24 hours, and I feel like I actually responded to it yesterday, which tells me I'm insulted by this disrespect. He says, when are we going to start questioning Pep Hamilton for the way the offense looks out there, the play calling in critical situations, not utilizing the weapons we have on the roster, like multiple tight ends and Nico Collins? Our offense looks so elementary compared to the rest of the league. As I answered this question like five times yesterday during the show, I think that right now, until Davis Mills stops missing wide open receivers, until Davis Mills stops throwing the ball 5 yards above the heads of open receivers or on 50-50 balls, I'm not going to blame Pep Hamilton, because Pep Hamilton has flat out gotten guys open. In the first week, OJ Howard has two touchdowns on the team. So I don't understand where the questioning of, like, why are they not using the tight ends? They got the ball to the guy that had been here for 10 days twice in the end zone in week one. Sometime after that strip sack, Davis Mills just started playing scared. And errantly, erratic, just not playing good football. So I'll gladly blame Pep Hamilton when Davis Mills starts actually doing the easy stuff right. And I think that any of the play calling issues right now are probably more of a reflection of Pep Hamilton not being sure what he has to work with Davis Mills.
Is it possible that strip sack has shell-shocked him? Like, to the point, I know it's only been one full game, plus a quarter and a half, we'll call it, with fourth quarter and overtime of that game. But the difference between Davis Mills before that strip sack was dealing. He was 20 of 29 for over 200 yards with two touchdowns and no interception. He had a passer rating of like 113 in that game. And then since he got strip sacked, Seth, he is barely a practice squad quarterback for fourth quarter, overtime, and a full game in Denver.
Yeah, it's disturbing and alarming, except that, yeah, you do have to remember, okay, it's been two games. And as I told somebody last night on Twitter, because he told me, he said, Seth, open your eyes. You know what the deal is now. Look, fine. We have no choice but to be patient right now. Unless you've got a thing for Mitch Trubisky, unless you desperately want Marcus Mariota in here to see what he's got, you've got no choice but to be patient right now.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out whether Davis Mills can rebound from this, whether you think the story is done and over with, and that's it. That's fine, but, I mean, he's the guy right now, and they're going to roll with him. It's been two games. I think that through the first two and a half quarters of the season, he showed some promise. He made some really good tight window throws. He was throwing with timing and rhythm and anticipation. And then that strip sack happened, and then something changed. And, yeah, he's got to bounce out of that. So that's probably the big challenge for him right now. And honestly, it might be one of those situations where throwing a pick or two ultimately in the long run won't be a big deal. Or it could be a good thing, because right now he looks like he's scared to throw an interception.
Yeah, he does. Maybe that's part of the whole thing of sailing footballs 5 yards over everybody's head. I'm going to throw it where nobody can catch it. How do you like them apples? All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. A reminder, talk saves lives. Join us here on Sports Radio 610 tonight, 8 to 10 p.m. for Odyssey's I'm Listening special. It's a conversation with athletes, celebrities, mental health professionals, your stories, all promoting mental health awareness across the nation. For more info, visit imlistening.org. Up next, we will dive into a status check on the NFL head coach's death pool. We got a nice long segment to do that, and there's still one national voice that is optimistic about Davis Mills. You will hear it next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.